We're talking more college football right now. We are joined by a national college football and basketball reporter for Yahoo Sports. He is the co-host of the Yahoo Sports College Podcast. He is Pete Thamel. Pete, it is great to have you on the show. How are you?
Jim, always great to be in the jungle. Appreciate you having me, man.
Pete, great to have you back. Thanks so much. Happy New Year. So let me start with the Rose Bowl. Pete, Oregon beat Wisconsin in the Rose Bowl last night, thanks in large part to a big game from Justin Herbert. So let me start right there. You had a great piece on him back in August. For those who do not know him, how would you describe him?
Yeah, Justin Herbert's really one of the more interesting kids I've run across in the years I've done this. You know, he is super bright, and if he didn't happen to be a top 10 NFL draft pick, he would have gone on and been a doctor. He's from a family of biologists and grew up sort of entranced by science and enjoyed science so much, he actually became a biology TA for the hardest bio class at Oregon. Two years ago, if you were having trouble with Stimlata or something you and I probably would have had trouble with in college, when you walked in, the guy who was give you help would be Justin Herbert, who was the starting quarterback for the Ducks. And part of the reason he came back this year, he'd have been the first quarterback pick last year. I really believe. Again, philosophically, maybe Murray would have fit with the Cardinals done better, but he would have been the top guy on most NFL teams' boards. And he came back to finish his degree, and because the moment that happened on the field after the Rose Bowl yesterday meant so much to him. He grew up a Ducks fan. The team hotel where they stay the night before games, you can actually see from his family kitchen if you look out the window. So he's a Eugene kid through and through, grew up going to games. So it was a really neat moment for him last night. His brother's on the team there, his younger brother, and, his dad's a lifetime Duck fan. So it was really fun. The Herberts are good people. It was fun to see them have that moment and for a kid to go back and his stock to stay really high, and obviously to avoid injury, was a really storybook finish.
And he played big, Pete, and that paid off. So that was a really good story right there. Pete Thamel joining us. Pete, if we were to go back to Saturday and LSU-Oklahoma, given all the hype surrounding Joe Burrow, it seemed like it would be impossible for him to exceed that hype. And then he goes out and he throws for 7 touchdowns in the first half. What did you make of his performance?
Yeah, I mean, Jim, like, this will sound like hyperbole, but I don't know if anyone in college football history has had a better season, single season, than Joe Burrow is having right now. I really think that's like, he's won Heisman by a couple metrics by more than anyone's won the Heisman. So amongst Heisman winners, you can already consider him one of the best in history. And then he goes out and outperforms that outlandish standard that he set for himself. Now look, I thought LSU would blow out Oklahoma. I think they'd score 49 in the first half and Joe Burrow would throw 7 touchdown passes? No. I mean, that's cartoonish. That's what you do to a directional bye game, the second week in September. It's really astounding what he's been able to accomplish. And look, he's done it against Florida and he did it against Texas A&M, and Auburn is the only team that for about a half kind of stymied LSU, and they adjusted and went on from there and went on to win. Georgia played an entirely different defense against them, and it didn't matter. They went out and rolled them. So I was in the moment in awe, but yet again, like, we should probably stop being surprised by Joe Burrow and Joe Brady at this point.
We're talking to Pete Thamel. All right, so if he completes nearly 75% of his passes, had maybe as good a year as anybody's ever had, he had more than 500 total yards in that game and 8 touchdowns. If you're Clemson, Pete, how do you go about trying to stop him?
Yeah, it's the great riddle and the great mystery of this season. Look, if anyone can do it, it's Brent Venables, the veteran Clemson defensive coordinator who has been on this stage, be it at Clemson or at Oklahoma in prior years, many, many times. And they have a really good back 7. Dabo Swinney said all year that he thinks the back 7 could be the best that they've had this year. What they don't have is a good front that's going to be able to pressure the quarterback. And the first step to beating Burrow is you got to make him uncomfortable, move him, and rattle him, maybe strip sack him, something like that. And I don't know if Clemson has the personnel up front to do that. That said, Venables called some really cagey blitzes against Ohio State and found creative ways to get pressure on Justin Fields. Fields threw 2 interceptions, which was one more than he'd thrown all year, and he probably should have thrown 4. So I think that 16 days to prepare for Brent Venables is a good thing if you're Clemson. And You know, and that back end is going to have to be high end in their coverage.
We're talking to Pete Thamel. Now, Pete, speaking of Ohio State, if you go back to that game, with 5 minutes left in the third quarter, Ohio State had the Jordan 4 fumble return for a TD taken off the board. What did you make of that ruling, and then what did people around the Ohio State program make of that ruling?
Well, I think it was pretty universal in the officiating community that I thought it was a coin flip call. And if it had been called the other way on the field, you couldn't have reversed it to a touchdown. Well, actually, you couldn't have done that because they would have ruled it down. But to me, there was not enough evidence to overturn it. But I can't say that sitting there in the press box, I was talking to Pat Forty, my old colleague, and I was like, look, I'm kind of like, I'm not standing on the table about this. I was like, I'm kind of wishy-washy about it. But if you feel that way about a call and, you know, you slow it down, you can see it from different angles. There's the whole fast replay versus, you know, game speed kind of thing. I don't think there was enough there to overturn it. Really smart officiating people that I respect echoed those comments. And the reaction out of Ohio State was pretty significant. Gene Smith, the athletic director, texted me that he was pissed about the call. And look, I think they have the right to be pissed. If they upheld the call, I don't think you would have heard the same outcry from the Clemson side.
So, like, top to bottom, though, it seems like you have a competitive game. We can't have a competitive game without there being some sort of high-profile officiating situation, including the Rose Bowl. So what do you make of the officiating in the Clemson-Ohio State game and the state of officiating overall?
Well, I do think social media and just the preponderance or the glut of different replays, different angles, different ways, you know, puts it all under a ton more scrutiny. It wasn't that long ago we didn't have replay. So the J.K. Dobbins catch would have been a touchdown. I mean, replay definitely played a big factor. And typically, like, I'm not a big point at the officials guy. Like, typically they get it right. You know, those guys are good at their jobs. They're professionals. They take it very seriously. But in that, certainly in that case in the Ohio State Clemson game, there was some room to second guess. And all the replays, all the angles, all the clips live on in social media. Imagine, like, what was it, the 85 World Series with the play at first? Imagine if that happened in this era right now. You know, but it wouldn't have because we have replay, you know? So, there's a lot to unpack from that Ohio State game. They had certainly had opportunities to win the game. But you can understand and sympathize with the coaches and administrators there who feel like that moment got pulled from them and had a big impact in the game.
No doubt. Pete Thamel joining us for a few more moments. So, Pete, what about Trevor Lawrence? He had taken some heat earlier in the season, but as you point out, he is 25-0 as a starter. And against Ohio State, he threw for more than 250 yards. He rushed for more than 100, including that 67-yarder. So what did he show you and how he handled that game?
Well, he showed guts. I mean, he showed straight-up guts. They didn't have a lot going, and the defensive line of Ohio State was mauling Clemson's front. And I mean, he had 15 carries and ETN only had about 10. So they basically knew that running the quarterback was one of the only chances they had. And Trevor Lawrence put that team on his shoulders. I give him a ton of credit. He played a monster game. I think that when I talk to coaches who played them in those first six or seven games, when he had his quote unquote struggles, and we all struggle like Trevor, right?
Yeah.
They just thought he was pressing. They thought he might have been overconfident in his arm. I still think he's a transcendent quarterback prospect. I still think highly of him. And he just, you know, when we really learn about quarterbacks is when the games are on the line in postseason type situations, right? And I think we learned a ton about Trevor Lawrence in that game. He was gutsy. There wasn't a lot there. He made plays, and Clemson figured it out.
All right, so it seems pretty obvious, Pete, that Clemson's biggest concern when facing LSU is going to be Joe Burrow. What is LSU's biggest concern when it comes to facing Clemson?
I would think it would be LSU's defense has just been okay. You know, like at this point in the year when you're dealing with teams this high end, you're dealing with best on best, right? I think Clemson had the top three defense and top three offense and scoring defense and offense in the country. LSU showed some vulnerability. Now, some of that is because of possessions, because they've scored so darn fast, right? Like, you know, they're gonna end up giving up more points, and they're gonna end up giving up a lot of passing yards because teams are trying to come back against them. But that said, like, there's no Glenn Dorsey on the defensive line. They do have some nice pieces in the secondary, especially Stingley, who's had one of the most remarkable freshman years at corner that I can remember. But I don't think they're like overly talented. So it would just be generally stopping Lawrence, stopping ETN, because they don't have the horses up front. Certainly they are not comparable on the defensive front to Ohio State. So can ETN really kind of have a monster game, control the game, keep the ball away from Burrow? And look, the collection of receivers in this game, Jim, I mean, you have the two quarterbacks who are going to be the number one pick in the next two drafts, and then the collection of receivers, we're probably going to see five guys picked in the first two rounds of the next two drafts, at least, at the receiver position on both these teams. So there's going to be some tall tasks for the DBs, and I think it's going to be a little bit of who can slow who down.
We're talking to Pete Thamel. You know, Pete, one last thought, too. We're in the middle of this 16-day stretch between the semifinals and the championship game. Like, how weird is this stretch, and how did it come to be in the first place?
It's very weird, and I wrote a column about this on Yahoo a couple weeks ago, that it basically they tried that horribly failed experiment to put the games on New Year's Eve, and they thought people would stop going out to parties and going to bars and stuff and watch 8 hours of football, and that was a abject failure. So this game was supposed to be on New Year's Eve, but when they recognized that mistake, they moved it to the 28th. And basically, they want the game on a Monday. So when the game was originally scheduled, and I feel like this is like one of those math problems, like when a train leaves Houston, like, you know,
right,
in junior high. But when the game was originally scheduled, they couldn't schedule it for the immediate Monday after because there wasn't a 7-day break. And so it was scheduled for what it couldn't be scheduled on the 6th. It had to be scheduled on the 13th. And then when they moved the game back, what would have been like a 12-13-day gap all of a sudden now becomes the 16-day gap. So it was sort of the failings of the college football playoff to recognize that New Year's mistake, and then compensating for it leaves this kind of awkward gap. And it's kind of funny, like when there's 2 weeks gap in the Super Bowl, which used to happen, Jim, like there's, you know, you talk about the Super Bowl for 2 weeks. Here there's like, you know, 18 games in between. There's NFL play. There's 3 weeks of NFL that people are going to have to digest. So I think it's an awesome matchup, and I'm fired up for it. It'd be interesting to see the focus it gets over the next couple of weeks because there's so much distracting people from this game.
It's a really good point. He is the national college football and basketball reporter for Yahoo Sports and a co-host of the Yahoo Sports College podcast, Pete Thamel. Pete, great job. Appreciate it so much. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Jim.
Pete Thamel joining us. It is a great matchup. It's a great matchup, and that break is really weird and a little bit awkward. And there is a lot of other things going on. So how much attention will it get between now and then? 1-800-636-8686. Who you got? Who you like? You know Dabo. You know Dabo absolutely loves the fact that they're not getting the respect he thinks they deserve, that they're an underdog, they've won 29 straight, they've already got a national championship. You know, he's going to use that to his favor. But LSU looks like a juggernaut.